was the origin of the Mahamudra tradition in the Marpa Kagyu, which is often called the Dakpo Kagyu, because of Genpopa creating the whole monastic tradition. And so we will chant the Dorje Chang prayer, which is the supplication, the lineage, and also includes all the Mahamudra instructions that in a very concise manner that we're going to go over in great detail. Dorje Chang Chen Te Lo Na Ro Dang Mar Ba Me La Cho Je Gam Bo Ba Du Zom Je Ja Kun Chen Gar Ma Je Jin Jun Je Jun Ba Zin Nam Dam Dri Da Za Zom Ba Len Rum Ba Zom Za Lan Ja Ja Je Lan Ya Nye Nya men ro gon da ba ga ju la so wan dem so ga ju la ma na ju ba ze na nam da jin ji lo Je lo gom ji gang ba song ba jin Ze na kun la ja jen me ba la Ze ni do na Chu be gom jen la Nye go shen ba me ba jin ji lo Mo gu gom ji go war sung ba shen Me na ter go je be la ma la Yundu zo wan de be gom chen la Ju min mo go che wa jin ji la Yeng me gom ji no jir zong ba jin Gang jar do be no wo so ma de ma jo de ga jo be gom chen la gom jar do dang dro wa jin ji lo Nam do no wo jong go song ba jin Ji amayin chir yang jar wa la Ma ga ro ba char we gom chen la Gol de yer ne dom ba jim ji lo Ye wa kun du yan da la ma dam Drel me jo ji pe la
long yojing. Sadang lam ji yon ten razone. Dorje jangi gopang yodong.
So just relax into open awareness. Just nature of your mind is like space, but the sun is shining. That's the sawa aspect. Whatever appears, it's not separate from your mind. Ripa. And then to recognize that everything that's appearing, it's just the outflowing awareness. It's not separate from the mind. Don't grasp onto it. No grasping, no fixation. So today I'm going to transmit the what's called the Mahamudra Gangama, the transmission that Tilopa gave to Naropa, the banks of the Ganges, after he performed 12 minor hardships and 12 extraordinary hardships. And usually before the teachings on the Mahamudra Gangama are given, the life stories of Tilopa and Naropa are transmitted, the transmission of those, the life stories of these great Mahasiddhas. So, because if you don't know who Tilopa and who Naropa was, you can't put these teachings into perspective as to how we're going to receive the teachings as opposed to how Naropa received these teachings and how Tilopa taught as opposed to how I am teaching. So one really has to understand this. And so Tilopa was a great master. He was an emanation of Chakrasamvara. And his whole life he was guided by Dakinis, who would appear at various times in the form of some old hag and would question him as to if he actually understood something intellectually or experientially. And so he was continuously guided. And then he had... received all what's now called the six yogas of Naropa, the heat yoga, dream yoga, illusory body yoga, transference of conscious yoga, all these yogas. He first received them from masters, one way of calling us masters in the four directions or four particular sets of masters. So he got all the teachings and perfected all these teachings first from human masters, and then he was taught Mahamudra by the formless Dakinis. So there's a whole story of how he received the teachings, how he went to Odiana and got the teachings from the formless Dakinis, and then directly got teachings from Vajradhara. So he could say, I have no human teachers, even though, of course, he had all these human teachers. But his ultimate realization came directly from Buddha Vajradhara. And then Naropa was prophesied to him that this great intellectual Naropa, who was at that time the guardian of one of the gates of Naropa, so he was a great scholar. And again, he was predicted by the Dakinis, and an old hag came to him and said, do you understand this treatise? And he says, yes, I understand this treatise. He says, oh, terrible. You have to see my brother. So she was an emanation of Vajrayogini. And her brother, of course, was Talopa, who was an emanation of Chakrasambhara. So he went in search of his guru. And so the major trials that he had to undergo, the minor trials was to make him a suitable vessel. He had so much pride, arrogant, he couldn't see his teacher because of his thinking, now, I am this pure yogi, and he didn't understand the difference between pure and impure. He had all these subtle obstacles. So all the trials were to undo Naropa's subtle obstacles. And then he went through major trials any of these trials, Talopa would have been arrested if he asked someone to do that today. So just to put things in perspective, so the last trial, there was a king who had sent for a bride and with a huge army, and Talopa tells Naropa, I want that queen, bring her to me. And so he dresses up as a Brahmin with a garland of flowers, and he offers the garland to the queen, and she was on this elephant. And when she gets down from the elephant, he grabs her and runs away with her to bring her to Talopa. And of course, then all the soldiers go after him and almost kill him. And so at that moment, when he was lying there, almost dead, Talopa then healed him and says, this dream body of yours, which is like a deer, it cannot be killed. And then he snapped his finger, and Naropa was totally back to himself. So this is how dream yoga was taught to Naropa. Total extraordinary experience. And after he went through the introduction to the six yogas directly through his almost dying, then he was going to teach him Mahamudra, so Naropa had to make a mandala offering, to make an offering before receiving teachings. We usually just get some a little plate. I have one on my shrine, but nevertheless, and we make a little offering of heaps of rice and hand it to him. So what kind of, so Naropa was in the desert. There was no water. There was no rice. There was no flowers. So Talopa says, well, your blood is like water. Your ears are like flour. Your body is like the four continents. So without thinking twice, Naropa offered his blood, his ears, his body as a mandala. And that was his, that was the kind of mandala offering Naropa offered to Talopa to get the teachings that I'm going to give you the blessings of, not the, not, you have to be, so he gave him the instructions on Mahamudra without elaborations. So that this is the reason before giving these teachings, you're given the teachings on Talopa and Naropa, so you know who was giving this particular teachings, what kind of student was getting these kind of teachings. Then you can appreciate what is the real meaning of devotion, compassion, diligence. So when you read these words, you who have diligence and compassion and devotion, it's not the way we have diligence and compassion and devotion. So it's really important to get this. So not that it's wrong how we have diligence, but these, you have to put this in context, because some of the teachings are the best meditation is no meditation. So that's great if you can do that, but we're not at that level. So when we hear these teachings, they're really, for us, they're a blessing and an inspiration for our practice. So I just want to make that really clear. So the first thing I want to, before I actually give the transmission of this text, I want to read more or less the introduction that Taisichi Rinpoche gave when he, to this transmission, before he gave the transmission of how are we supposed to benefit from this transmission as the type of practitioners we are. So this teaching was given in Bodh Gaya, and the actual teaching I'm going to give you was given in a different context. It was given to his Mahamudra students in Sharabling at his seat. But here, I think this is a good way to introduce this before I give the transmission. So here he says, Talopa was the lord of the siddhas, an emanation of Chakrasambhara, who was from Bangladesh. And Naropa was from Kashmir, was a great pandit and siddha from Nalanda Institute, who underwent these 12 great trials, which Thich Nhat Hanh already explained. He'd given the life story of both Talopa and Naropa when he gave this transmission in Bodh Gaya. And after that, Talopa transmitted these Mahamudra teachings that were later known as Mahamudra Gangama, because they were given on the banks of the Ganges River. So when we say Mahamudra, what do we mean? The Tibetan word is Chacha Chempo. And here's just one of many different ways of explaining Chacha Chempo. Cha means primordial wisdom. Ja transcends samsara and nirvana. Chempo means beyond all observation, beyond all ability to describe conceptually. And the Sanskrit word Mahamudra, you can interpret as mudra meaning a sign, a seal, or a stamp, and maha meaning nothing greater. So how to explain this is that in all of relative truth, everything is the display of the Dharmakaya. Everything is sealed by the stamp or sign of suchness or thusness, thatness. Everything is the union of clarity and emptiness, appearance and emptiness, bliss and emptiness. There is nothing that's not sealed with this stamp. All phenomena have this and are sealed by the spontaneously present ultimate nature. This nature pervades and permeates all phenomena. Therefore, one says, great. There is no phenomena in samsara and nirvana that's not permeated by dharmata, spontaneously present wisdom. So, in the final turning of the wheel of dharma, in the Uttara Tantra, it's said that the Dharmakaya or Buddha nature pervades everything. So that's another way of saying the same thing. The great seal, Mahamudra, pervades everything. Nothing is missing in Mahamudra. So this particular teaching, the Upadesha Mengag, the key instructions on Mahamudra. So then Taisitu said, when the Lama gives these teachings, how is one supposed to practice? These are the key instructions and were sung almost like a doha, the songs of realization. They are the expression of a yoga's experience, here the Mahasiddha Tilopa. In order to benefit from these teachings, one must have three kinds of faith. Sincere faith, faith of longing, and faith of belief. So this is very important. Sincere faith, faith of longing, and faith of belief. So sincere faith is the mind must become sincere and have no doubt. So I think this is one of the reasons to get instructions on how to recognize mind's nature, sometimes called pointing out instructions. Because when you have a glimpse of recognition of the nature of mind, then you've experienced it, you don't have any doubt anymore. And all kinds of, you know, you may not get enlightened or anything like that, but you are clear that your true nature is this union of clarity and emptiness. Because you've experienced a glimpse of that, so you have confidence. And so it's extremely important to gain confidence and not have doubts about the teachings. So at some point, give some clues on how to gain this confidence, we'll see at the appropriate moment whether it's appropriate for me to give you pointing out instructions. So we'll see what happens. I don't. Anyway, that's, I want you to be clear about that. Then longing faith. So when I met Taisitu Rinpoche, I was 38. He was 28. I had met all the great scientists in the world, all the Nobel Prize winners, the best minds of our times. And then I talked to Taisitu Rinpoche. I said, gee, if I knew how to say what I was thinking while I was talking to him, if I could be clear about what my questions were, if I could have that clarity. He had that. He knew exactly what I was trying to express, clarified it, nothing more, nothing less. But he put everything that was going on in my life at that time into very clear statement of what I was thinking and how I was feeling, what my state of mind was. So I immediately said, I want that. I want that clarity of mind. I'm going to go for it. I didn't even know who I was talking to. It was some person visiting Santa Fe and we were having tea at someone's house, Paljor, at Project Tibet, actually. So so the next day I took refuge, of course. So that's what this longing faith is. I want to achieve that state, the level of Talopa and Naropa. I want to be like that. That's the longing faith. Really important. So that helps to meet someone who has those qualities. Then you say, I want to be like that. That's the quality. That's what I want. And also, when you hear the life story of Talopa and Naropa, you get so inspired. Or Milarepa, you know, said, if I could just have a fraction of that clarity, that would be fantastic. So that's the, so that hopefully you can, when you delve into the lives of the great siddhas, you can get that inspiration and then have the longing faith, really important for practice. And then belief. When we know about Talopa and his history, we will naturally have no doubts. We will be free of all doubts. So there's the sincere faith, the longing faith, and then belief that this is not an impossibility. People in the past have achieved realization. So the nature of mind permeates all of reality. You can reach that kind of realization. So when we have faith and we are dedicated, and we have respect for the teachings, this has to come from the depths of your heart. And that is the attitude one should have, that when you hear this teaching, to have the three kinds of faith. So, so before one can even technically, in the old days, you weren't, you had to be given the transmission of the text before you were allowed to study it. So you may have looked at it because I sent you some teaching. Now you can get everything on the internet. So there's, but now I will give you this transmission. And after this teaching's over, I'll send you my edited transcripts of the teachings that Taisichu Rinpoche gave in Sharabling. So then you can study them because you will be able to put them in context. So this is a real problem with Dharma now. Everything's on the web. You can read anything. The most advanced kind of teaching, Dzogchen, Mahamudra, everything, six yogas of Naropa. But if you are not, when you read these teachings, you bring your ideas about these teachings, your level of understanding. So that the whole purpose of a lineage of transmission is to present you the teachings that don't have concepts, non-conceptual way, by a person who has gain more realization than you, gives you the teaching, you get a totally different take. And if you don't do that, you just bring your ideas to the teaching. 90% of the time, you get it wrong. So that's the importance of lineage. So these teachings in two different ways have been transmitted to me by my guru, who I have total confidence in, and he has some confidence in me. Otherwise, he wouldn't have told me I can teach. Now I will just read the transmission of the text, which I timed. It takes about 5 minutes. So just take this as a blessing. This is the blessing of the lineage. Drupchen Tilo Pelchag Chacha Chempo Ganga Majukso. And I'd like to thank Ellen from my center and Sewang for transliterating this for me. Otherwise, it would take me much, much longer. I couldn't read it very quickly because my ability to read Tibetan is not great. Gyakra Gedo Mahamudra Upadesha Bodhagu Chacha Chempo Minna Paldoji Gandrala Chazalo Kawa Jiji Namalagupa Dunazale Lona Narobo Kalda Nujila Dujajo Jaja Chempo Dendo Migi Gyan Pena Namda Gangaya
The mono drum yo da jo wa zo wa jo cha cha chen bo ne ji me na di jo wa ga de ning na ne ba sho.
So that's the transmission of the text, the teaching, this very sacred teaching that Tilopa gave to Naropa, and then Marpa went to study with Naropa, spent 12 years with him, and then was giving these teachings in Bulahari, and then translated them with and checked by Naropa and other scholars that he translated the. It says Sanskrit. I'm actually talking to my Sanskrit scholar friends. They don't know yet this is Sanskrit text. So it turns out something very interesting that, you know, Tibetan was a made up language, and it was made up to translate Sanskrit. So when you translate certain Sanskrit words, there are certain Tibetan words that were added in a particular way. There's an exact way, word for word way of translating Sanskrit into Tibetan. So what my scholar friend is looking at is if these words are being used appropriately in this particular Tibetan text, does it refer back to a previous Sanskrit thing, or was this actually some dialect, which is what my friend thinks, that's very close to Sanskrit, some Indian language based on Sanskrit that was used to give these? So it's an interesting question for scholars. And there are many different versions of the Tibetan that exist out there, slightly different versions. And some of them even have been reorganized so they make sense to people who are doing Dzogchen practice. So if you reorganize some of these sentences, then they're also given a Dzogchen interpretation, since Mahamudra and Dzogchen are only different in terminology. Different, same nature of mind, but different way of describing it. Different conceptual terms are used. So, so I think it's for that reason that when these teachings were given in Sherab Ling, that great emphasis was done on explaining what the words mean, putting them in context so that you could actually understand the words that and how they fit into the practice of Mahamudra. Because every translation I've looked at of the Mahamudra Upadesha reads totally differently. So for that reason, the first teachings that Sitra Rinpoche gave on this particular transmission spent a lot of time on understanding the words. And the second transmission was translated into six languages. So he taught in Tibetan. The translators gave their take on it. So there was no discussion of, there was a lot of discussion on how to put this into practice, but not what, how to think about, how to unpack the very, the words that were used in, you know, it's like a poem. So it's the first words of a lot of these sentences starts off by saying, as in the metaphor. So all these things are metaphoric, and you have to understand what these metaphors are referring to. In first in the Tibetan language, and then for us. So the text has four parts. Then each part has subparts. And this particular text had a commentary by the Karmapas, one of the Karmapas, I don't know which one, ninth maybe. And so a lot of texts that are translated from Sanskrit into Tibetan don't have a particular kind of index called the Sajje. But this text in the was commented on later on by one of the Karmapas, and therefore it has a particular kind of index which allows one to actually know everything that's in the text. It's so we're going to talk about that a little bit later. So the four parts of the text, the first is the title. Second part is the translator's salutation. The third part is the main teaching. And the fourth part is the conclusion. So the title is Mahamudra Upadesha in Sanskrit. And when this is translated in Tibetan, it becomes Chacha Chempo Menlong, which translated into the sacred instruction of Mahamudra. So we discussed the actual meaning of the Sanskrit word Mahamudra and the Tibetan word Chacha Chempo a little earlier. So I don't have to go into that again. And then the second part is the translator's salutation to Vajrayogini. So I think I sent, everyone got sent the Tibetan and the transliteration. So if you need to hear the words, if you go to your transliteration, so we're at the third line, Pal Dorje Khandro La Chaksalo. That's the salutation. So this means salutation to the Sri Vajra Dakini. Chaksalo means I salute, take refuge, all that, I salute the Dorje Khandro. So the Vajra Dakini was the protector of this text. She was the protector of Tilopa, the protector of Naropa. And also, Tilopa received his teachings from the formless Dakinis, primordial wisdom. And then he taught Naropa, who then taught Marpa. So that's the meaning of this salutation. So, Vajrayogini and Vajravarahi, nature of wisdom itself is what is being saluted. That's who Vajrayogini or Vajravarahi represents. And then, after this salutation, then the actual text begins. And this has two parts. The first part is Tilopa telling Naropa that he is going to transmit this sacred instruction to Naropa. And this is after Naropa had made a mandala offering of his body, his actual body and his blood. So those are the next three sentences that I transmitted. So Kawa Cheching Lama Lagupa Duknal Zoden Loden Naropa Kalden Koki Lola Ditar Jo. So maybe it's, you know, I have several. So maybe I'll read one of the English translations. So before I get into the actual discussion of, there's so many English translations, I think my. So here's one English translation. You work with hardships, are dedicated to the guru, can endure suffering, and are full of insight. Naropa, the proper conditional one, take this to your heart. That's the English of these three sentences. One way of saying it, okay? So, the Kawa Che Ching, those words, means one who is doing the most difficult thing to do. So this shows that Naropa is diligent, the first quality possessed by Talopa's disciple. Whatever Talopa asked him to do, no questions asked. He didn't say, should I do this? Should I not do this? This is something I didn't understand when I first met my guru. So that when they offer a suggestion, it's not a suggestion, it's a command. Because they know what you need to do. You don't. And so when they suggest, oh, why don't you come out here and help out with this conference or whatever, you don't say, well, I'm really busy that week. I'll come out the next week when you're giving teachings. This is what happened to me. And then I came out. Oh, I knew I made a big mistake. So, we really, when the teacher tells us something, it's not a suggestion. It's really a command. And you, when you read the story of Naropa or Talopa, when the former Dakini said, go work for this prostitute, even though he had been from a princely family or kingly family, he went and worked for the prostitute because he had to give up some subtle pride that he had, that he came from this glorious family. So, so that seemingly innocuous statement, you work with hardships, are dedicated to the guru, can endure sufferings, and are full of insight. It's not, those aren't just intellectual statements. So the devotion is Lama Lagupa. So that means Naropa is devoted to Talopa. That's the second quality. And again, we saw that his devotion was total. Jump off a cliff, he jumped off a cliff. And then he had to be put together again by Talopa. So, unlike me, I get it wrong all the time. So, I didn't jump off any cliffs. So, I do my best to do what my guru asks of me. But I have not done 2-3 year retreats. I'm hopeless. So, then the duknal zoden loden naropa, so it means you're able to be patient with suffering. And that's the extreme. So, I mean, we have a hard time being patient sitting through long retreats, listening to long teachings. But he was thrown off a cliff and almost died. He was very patient, waited for 2 days for his guru to come and put him back together again. So a bit different. And then Loden means wisdom and intelligence. So it also is an epithet for bodhisattva level wisdom and intelligence, not just book learning wisdom and intelligence. So it means that he perfected all the paramitas. Little different kind of wisdom than our kind of wisdom. So this really, that's what's wrong with just coming to a text and saying, oh, I'm pretty diligent. I can endure suffering. I'm a proper vessel for this teaching. So we have to really put things in perspective. So summarizing this is that Talopa is saying Naropa has diligence, but perfection of diligence, devotion, perfection of devotion, patience, perfection of patience, wisdom, perfection of wisdom, non-dualistic diligence, devotion, patience, and wisdom. And then he says, Kalden Koki Lola Dita Jo. So that's, you know, translated as the proper conditioned one. Take this to your heart. So Kalden is someone who has the capacity for receiving the teaching, who's the appropriate recipient of this teaching. And when we say kalpa mepa, that means we don't have the capacity, we don't have the quality to receive this teaching. Someone who's not the correct vessel. So kalpa followed by dempa means he is the correct vessel. And then koki lola ditar jo, which is sometimes translated as do this with your mind, take this to your heart, really means I'm going to teach this, so you have to practice this. So in Tibetan, this is called kulsi. You tell someone to do it, learn it, practice it. So the talopa is kulwa, giving him these commands to Naropa. What I'm going to teach you here, you practice it. Naropa, you have all these four qualities. You're the correct vessel to receive these teachings. And he's being commanded to learn, listen, learn, and practice what he is teaching here and to gain realization. So these four sentences, when they're unpacked, you know, have a different meaning than just reading them. You work with hardships, are dedicated to the guru, you know. So they're really, this is the whole guru-disciple connection when you're a Mahasiddha guru like Talopa and a bodhisattva level like Naropa, who will then become a Mahasiddha after practicing this type of teaching. So Talopa is an authentic Lama. He received the teachings directly from Vajradhara. Naropa is the perfect student with all the transcendent qualities, not just ordinary perfections, transcendent perfections. Therefore, he would be able to understand these instructions. Naropa was prophesized to Talopa by the Dakinis that he was the appropriate student. So I hope that gives a little bit flavor of what I don't know what time, how are we doing? Oh, we have quite a bit of time. Okay, so this is the reason to look at, do a textual analysis of the words and in the context of who is teaching whom. What do these words mean to someone at Naropa's level? So for us, we take these as a blessing and we understand them at whatever level of realization we have, and they're the purpose of the transmission is for you to get to the next level. After hearing these teachings, your inspiration will be greater. You will have a better idea of really what is transmission, etc. You know, so that and with the blessing of this transmission, and then you're studying it and practicing according to these instructions to your level. So all you can do is your level best. That's what, which means at whatever level you have realization, you do this practice and you get to the next level. That should be your aspiration and your inspiration. None of us are going to be Talopa in Naropa because we're not practicing at that level. We all have jobs, family, this, that, you know. So, so now we get to the actual. So let me see if I could put the. Where did I put the Tibetan? Too many things open. So where it starts with Cha Cha Chenpo Tendu Mechi Kiang, that's where the actual instructions take place. And I'll first read this English translation so we're going to go through these four lines. Though Mahamudra cannot be taught, for example, consider space. What depends on what? Likewise, your own mind, Mahamudra, doesn't depend on anything. Let go and rest in the uncontrived, original, it says nature state, that's a typo, natural state. So that's these four lines, which are, we're starting with the actual instruction. And I guess here, I will have to introduce Mahamudra to you because that's what he's doing. Okay, I'll do my best. I'm not, that's all I can do. Okay. So first I'll read it. So this is the Cha Cha Chenpo Motepa. Cha Cha Chenpo is the Tibetan word for Mahamudra. Motepa means showing. Mo means face. And tepa means giving, showing the face of Mahamudra. So introducing Mahamudra. And then I'm sorry. So before Sitchurumpa actually got into the text itself, he summarized the entire practice, the whole text through what's called the index structure of the text. So maybe I'll do that first, and then I'll do the introduction to the nature of mind. So he was describing how Tibetan commentaries work. So, and giving what is the, how is the index, or what's called the sajé, of this particular commentary, how was it set up? So the first part is the introduction of Mahamudra. And then he explained, what is the word for introduction, motepa? What is the person who shows or introduces? And he was describing the way motepa is used is that if there's a conference, then there's a panel on the stage and the public is in the audience. And then there's a person who introduces the panel. That's the motepa. He says, this is so-and-so who is the expert of this faith. This is the expert of the Jewish faith. This is the expert of the Muslim faith. So he's introducing all the people. So here what is being introduced is the nature of the mind, the motepa of the nature of mind. So the second instruction in the summary, you know, the index of when before you of the commentary is, what is the essence of Mahamudra? Mahamudra is the essence of everything, and the essence of Mahamudra is the essence of everything. So that's the second idea in this text. The third instruction is that Mahamudra is beyond any sort of perception, a conception, any duality. So one has to understand that one cannot describe Mahamudra conceptually. So there's a whole section on that, giving various metaphors for understanding that. And the fourth instruction has to do with the kind of experiences you have when you're practicing. And then the fifth instruction is how one enhances this practice with other vehicles of practice. So in the text, there are discussion of the chants and the drops. What can you do physically to encourage having a direct experience of the nature of mind, or doing salong practices, gaze practices, trulkor practice, physical exercises that help get the winds to go into the central channel, so which stabilize. So series will help you get a recognition. So that's the fifth instruction. And then he explains that the commentary is extremely important because it tells you exactly where you are in a text. So you know, if you're interested in the adjunct part, you go to the fifth part of the text, and then in that, all these things are described. So if you actually just know this type of index called the sajé, you easy to memorize the entire text or talk about the entire text. And Sitchin Rinpoche then went on to say that he was a student. He was able to do extremely well on all the exams his gurus gave him because he would just memorize the how the text was structured and then could just talk about, remember where in the text this particular discussion was and then talk about it. So it's extremely useful methodology which that he personally used. So now we'll go back to the Chacha Chenpo Tendu Mechi Kyang. So Chacha Chenpo, Mahamudra cannot be shown. Ten is the word for shown. Tendu Mechi Kyang, the nature of Mahamudra is beyond thought. It's ineffable. The nature of phenomena cannot be realized by dualistic thought. And it's like space or the sky. That's the metaphor that's continuously used in both Mahamudra and Dzogchen teachings. The metaphor of this, the mind is like space. So when we were being taught Mahamudra, we were inside a temple, and then the discussion was, well, so there's an altar here and this building here, but 10,000 years from now, probably not going to be around. So when you stick an altar or a building in space, does the space go anywhere? Does it disappear? Is it changed by having the fundamental nature of space changed when you put a building in the space? So when you understand that intellectually or in various levels, then finally, ultimately, you realize that space is beyond whatever is occupying space. So that's what makes it a really good metaphor for the nature of mind. The nature of mind is not affected by whatever is going on in your mind. So that's why the metaphor of space or the sky is used. And when you look at the sky, if it's clear and it has no particular direction, just like your mind has no direction, and it has different colors in the morning, afternoon, and night, just like your mind has good thoughts, bad thoughts, black and white thoughts, all kinds of things. So very useful, space and the sky, very useful metaphor, which will appear a lot in this particular text and in Dzogchen teachings. So there was a question, I mean, that I always liked. So if you look at the quantum vacuum, nothingness, you know. So in physics, but this is just concepts now. So is the quantum vacuum a better metaphor? First of all, most people don't know what the quantum vacuum is, but that's scientists talk about the vacuum state, but the vacuum state is not nothing. Everything is in the vacuum state. All possibilities, the whole universe comes out of the vacuum. So it's created from a false vacuum that then just energy gets transformed into particles, the whole solar system gets created. So this is a metaphor also, meaning this is just one scientific conceptual framework, but it has a lot of similarity with what's going on. You know, so there's the base awareness and there's the outflowing awareness. They're not separate. It's not like the particles are separate from the vacuum, or that whatever appears in the mind is separate from the mind. Something similar to that, another metaphor, scientific metaphor, could be the quantum vacuum. This didn't exist. This metaphor didn't exist in the time of the Mahasiddhas, but so that's another possibility. But space always existed. Good, great metaphor for a lot of the qualities of the nature of mind, and how space is unaffected by whatever's going on in it. The nature of our minds, the Sem Ni, the Ningpo of our minds, is not affected by whatever's happening. There's something that has to be experienced. So, okay, where am I? So it's like, this is that mind is like space, first sentence. The next sentence is the example. So perna means by way of metaphor. So there's a lot in this text. Just so you know that these are just metaphors. Who shows the sky to whom? Perna namka gangi gongla ten. When you say, that's the sky, what is that? Where? In space, what is supported by what? I mean, there are lots of different translations of this. So just like I was talking about space, nothing supports space. It's just all pervasive. It's not changed by what you put in it. In the same way, Rongsem Chacha Chela Tenyo Me, in the same way, exactly the same way your mind, Rongsem, your own mind, when you meet Mahamudra, there's nothing to show. No object to show. Yul means object, Yul Chen means subject. So these are the first three sentences. So when your nature of your mind is pointed out to you, you just experience it. You just can't, it's like space. You experience space, we're in space. You know, just like a fish is in water, we're in air. But how do you describe it? It's indescribable, ineffable. So I guess here, one has to get an idea, what does this all mean? So this, when I was in the Bronx and we were having a philosophical discussion, we would say, what does it all mean, jelly bean? So how do you understand the ineffable? Well, you can't understand it, but you can experience it. So one way of getting a tiny glimpse of the non-conceptual, spacious nature of mind is to shatter thought processes. So this method is used in the Mahamudra Chut, coming from the Shijie, the pacification and cutting lineage of coming from Padampa Sanjay, but this Chut aspect, Mahamudra of Chut, comes from the great female Machik Labdran, who is an emanation of Prajna Paramita, the emanation of perfection of wisdom. So in both in Chit and Treksho, the Dzogchen teachings, so like, for example, the last three sentences spoke by the great Dzogchen master Garab Dorje, and then Patro Rinpoche wrote a commentary on how to actually put those sentences into practice. How do you actually take those sentences of Garab Dorje and put them in practice? A very similar technique was introduced to shatter conceptual thought. And so to do this, one in the Dzogchen language, you would say, make an earth-shattering pay. So in the church of Machik Labdran, that's called the next to the, you know, just saying pay and mixing your mind with space is how she would say it. And there are elaborate and inelaborate and totally unelaborate ways of doing this, but we will say pay three times, two times softly, third time. And so the instruction is every time your mind gets very busy, when you're trying to rest your mind in its natural state, you utter an earth-shattering pei. The mind that shatters thought, and observe your mind. So we will, just so you have a clue about what this is all about, we have to do something here. Otherwise, everything beyond this is not going to make, you know, it's just going to be mumbo jumbo words. Okay, so I have to be careful not to, I have a loud voice, not to shatter everybody. But this is for you to, you have to shatter your own conceptual thoughts. So we'll do pay. And the third one, just really blow out your circuits and then rest in the nature of your non-conceptual, spacious, rippa awareness, base awareness, whatever. Okay. So this is something you do in the privacy of your home, away from everybody. So when you're practicing, you first practice on the emptiness of the nature of mind, this non-conceptual, spacious quality. Then you have to bring that to the co-emergent phenomena. Realize that the co-emergent phenomena also is empty. So this particular introduction is to the introduction to the fact that the co-emergent awareness on nature of mind is empty. That's the word they use, empty. Tongpan yi. Meaning not describable conceptually, has to be experienced. Okay, so I think now with that introduction to nature of mind, just glimpse, teeny glimpse. I'm not going to talk any further about it. So there are all kinds of ways of introducing the nature of mind. But this at least gives you some idea at our level of how we can get a glimpse of recognition, so that I'm not just saying mumbo jumbo in what follows. So then Sri Rinpoche said, when you practice that which cannot be shown, then it naturally develops. It naturally comes to our mind that which not can be, that which cannot be shown, that which cannot be described. So I was going to try to, but then not accessible. Maybe I'll talk about this afternoon, how the Dzogchen talks about this, but then maybe that's a distraction. So how one practices this is described in the next four sentences, which start with Macho Nyume Nangdu Lole Jok. It's about there. You can see that on the three quarters of the way down, two thirds of the way down. Oh yeah, again, I should read this in English. Okay, here's one translation. If you loosen up your tightness, there's no doubt that you are liberated. For example, when you look into space, seeing will cease. Likewise, when mind looks at mind, the flow of the thoughts cease and unsurpassable enlightenment is attained. So this really has to be explained because what seeing will cease means something very different than what you think. It's really non-grasping onto visual phenomena and other phenomena. So it's not, you're not going to stop seeing. You're not going to stop having thoughts. So very, that's why this very hard. It's very hard to get anything out of reading this. So in that first sentence, Machu Nyingme Nyume Nangdu Lola Jok, Machu means unaltered. Machu Chuma, the opposite, means you're doing something, you're trying to do something. So Machu means the unfabricated natural state. So just let it be. Nyume means primordial as well as fresh. Nangdu means in that state. Lo means relaxed. Sho, leave it. So sit on this unfabricated, primordial, natural state, Machu Nyume, and leave it on the Machu Nyume, and remain on the Machu Nyume. So Nyume means this fresh, unaltered, natural state. Nyuma means dirty, like dirty water. So in this unaltered, fresh, and primordial state, relax and let it be. No looker, no looking, what is looked at. So there's no triplicity. The looker, looking, and what is looked at, all of that's your own mind. So there's no triplicity. Where are we in time? Oh, doing zipping along. So we should just do that now. So just relax. Since you're not online, if you have to say pate to shatter your thoughts, and then just relax and stay in that fresh state. You don't do anything. Best meditation, no meditation means everything's okay. Everything is just part of the Dharmakaya. It's the Dharmakaya co-emergent Dharmakaya and the rays of the Dharmakaya. If you just let it be, everything's okay. Dharmakaya is like space, can't be altered by whatever thoughts appear. Just let everything naturally rest in your primordial awareness. So when you're practicing resting in the nature of mind, you just do short period of time. Too many thoughts appear. Pet! Just destroy them. Go back. And, you know, just 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. Take a break from your work. Sit in the nature of mind. You have to accustom yourself to the nature of mind. It's a matter of we're not accustomed to resting in the nature of mind. We just have to make that our habit, rest in the nature of mind, just short periods, take a break and rest in the nature of mind. Until you're familiar with it, you have confidence in it. This is it, there's nothing, this is the nature of mind. It's only one nature of mind. Pervades everyone, everything. Thoughts come, go, fine. But if they get too, if you start grasping onto them or worrying about them, then pet, destroy them. Okay? So that's poor man's version of introduction to nature of mind. So the next sentence has to do with Chingpa Lola Lona Drowa Tetsome. So Chingpa means bound. Lona, let it be. Drowa, released. Tetsome, no doubts. So this has to do with we're tied up with our thoughts and afflictions. So the translation of this sentence is something is tied up. When you release it, it will be released. There is no doubt. Anything that is bound, when you release it, it's loosened. So if you have a bundle of twigs that are tied and you have a rope around it, and you go to the rope and untie the knots, the bundle will fall into twigs. So that's what the meaning of alona. It will be free. When you free it, it will be free. And then tetsome, no doubt. And then you ask, well, how do I release it? How do I do the lo? Chingpa lo na. When you tie something, you just untie it, it's released. When something gets changed, you get the key and unlock it. How do I do that? And that's explained in the next three sentences, how to untie the knots of our thoughts and afflictions. So, that's the, if you look into space, seeing will cease thing. If you look at the middle of space, namke kyo, then the definition of seeing something will cease because there's nothing to see. And you're seeing there's nothing to see. So this is an example. And then when you look at your mind with your mind, so that's sem ki sem la, then all the thoughts will cease. And then the highest liberation will be achieved. So that's la me mepa, nothing above it. La ma means nothing above, the mother above. So la ma mepa, nothing is above it. The liberation you'll reach by looking at the mind by the mind. And then when you find there is nothing to look at, then you become it. So that means you become familiarized with it. All the thoughts, all the defilements, all the karma will cease to exist. And that's automatic purification. And then you'll also get the accumulation, which is primordial wisdom. You will experience primordial wisdom or supreme enlightenment. And then when this nature of mind, which is primordial, which is always there, and so this has to be understood as co-emergent. The technical term is len chepe. So co-emergent means born with it, but you know, it's not like when you're born from your mother, you're born with it. It's born within you. It comes along with that. It's not, it's always there. You're born with it everywhere in each type of birth. This primordial wisdom is always there. If you're born into a human life, you're born with it. When you're born into a bardo realm, you're born with it. When you're born into a god's realm, you're born with it. When you're an animal, you're born with it. It's primordial. So you have to understand that whatever realm you're born into, you're born with that same nature of mind, which is primordial. So phenomena you're also born with. But then, depending on the realm you're born with, the co-emergent phenomena can be different. When you're a bird, you see colors you can't see as a human. So, and your experience is totally different. So your environment as a fish is water. If you're out of the water, you're dead. So what becomes home for someone becomes prison for someone else, becomes death for someone else. So that's what we have to understand. The co-emergent phenomena are, although they're empty, they're different. They depend on the karma that produced us in a particular state with a particular set of senses. So that, although it's co-emergent, the phenomena is co-emergent, it really is relative to our karma, totally relative. How, you know, even as humans, how we experience things, totally different. You know, we just have to go on TV and see that there are people who experience reality totally different than us, even though they have the same sense perception, same brains. They've been conditioned totally different. They experience everything differently. So that's the co-emergent phenomena. So here we're talking about the co-emergent primordial wisdom, which is always there. So when the Dharmakaya is introduced, then all the other thoughts will cease. Other thoughts will be purified, is what it really means, in the sense that whatever is going on, you're not going to grab onto it. You're going to recognize their co-emergent phenomena, the radiance of the Dharmakaya, and you are going to be resting in the mind's nature, whether the mind is at rest or whether the mind is moving. So those things are going to be happening. So that's the meaning of thoughts will cease. So I guess we can start going into the next four lines. For example, mists rise from the earth and vanish into space. They go nowhere, nor do they stay. Likewise, though thoughts arise, through seeing your own mind, the waves of thought clear up. So that's the sentences, Pirna, Salyang, Trinli, Namke, Yingsu, Deng, Garyang, Songwa Meijing Garyang Nipa Mei Dejin Simle Jungwei Tokshu Kiang Rongsem Tongwei Tokpe Balap Dang. So here the analogy is on the earth there's this whole cycle of rain. And then on the earth, and then evaporation from the ocean and lakes becomes steam, clouds, mists. So they seem to vanish, but they haven't gone anywhere. They don't remain anywhere. So all the cycle of mist forming, arising, going into the clouds, returning from the sky back. So just like that, thoughts arise from the mind, But when you see the nature of your mind, rang sem yingpo, the nature of your mind, then these waves of thoughts just will come and go, just like the clouds clear into the sky. You're not going to be grabbing onto them. And then this essence of mind, which is primordial and which is born with you, and the nangwa, which is the perceptions, everything we perceive, they're not two. So this is what one another way of saying it, the base awareness and the outflowing awareness are like the sun and the rays of the sun. So this is the co-emergent aspect. The perceptions are co-emergent, and they're not separate from our base awareness, but they're experienced differently in different realms. So when you were born in the human realm, the nangwa of the human realm is born with you. When you're born in the animal realm, the nangwa of the animal realm is born with you. So this is nangwa lenchik chepe. And in the mind, what the mind perceives are not separate. The Dharmakaya and the radiance of the Dharmakaya are not two. So another way of describing the fact that the base awareness and the outflowing awareness, or the Dharmakaya and the rays of the Dharmakaya, are not two, it's the four moves, you know, that it doesn't exist as something, nothing, both, or neither. So you can't really describe this conceptually. It's just this is something that has to be realized. It's a realization, not a conceptualization. So to use examples or parables or then there's the following four sentences. Perna namke rangshin kadok ible de karna gagi doshon gyuwa me deshin rangsem yingpo kadok ible de gedik karna choji go mi chur. So that has to do with color. But maybe it's 10-2.
Questions or break?
Oh, maybe some questions. Yeah, we'll start with the nature of space not being describable, but, you know, in terms of colors and shapes. We'll start with that this afternoon, but maybe... if everyone can be unmuted and people can ask some questions.
I have a question. Then,
yeah?
What does pay mean?
Ah, what is, I actually have, it's a combination of pa and ta, okay. But I can't remember. But it's just,
is it just like a sound? Is it the sound, or is it really a translation?
Sound.
Oh, it's a method, you know, but it actually has a meaning. I can look it up.
Yeah, I would like to know.
It has to do, maybe it has to do with relative expulsion, and absolute truth
expulsion
together.
Expulsion of breath. It has to do with expulsion of breath, which is what creates the physical sensation of the shock.
But it also has a...
No, I think it has a meaning.
It has a technical, but it doesn't matter. I mean, this is just a way of shattering thoughts.
Yeah, okay.
And it's a method used in Trek Show and Chip, Mahamudra Chip. It's not the usual way of in the... In so I've I feel comfortable, since I'm a mature practitioner, of giving you this method rather than other methods that would be more difficult to, I think, do over.
Well, the Sufis have a sound too. They use hu. Uh-huh.
It is a sound. Ha also is
ha,
used.
Yeah. Ha and hu. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that has a dip. Pe is the actual shatterer of thoughts.
Great.
That particular expert.
Thank you very much for that. Very helpful. Okay. Yeah.
So, any other questions? You have to unmute yourself. Maybe I can.
Okay, I got it. So pe, does the word pe mean the shatterer of thought?
No. I have written down what pe means, but it's not. Okay. It actually has some meaning. Pa and ta together, it's two aspects, relative and ultimate. But you know, but the purpose of saying pe, you don't have to know what pe means.
Right.
It's
know what it feels
both
like.
In Chit and Treksho, it's used to introduce the nature of mind. That's its only purpose.
Okay.
Shatters the thought so you can observe mind's nature.
Introduces the nature of mind. Yeah.
I think I'm asking an obvious thing that I have a sense of, but I'd rather hear you say it. The base, what's the difference between, let's see, or base awareness is this experience of mind, nature of mind, and outgoing awareness is about phenomena?
Yeah, everything that you experience. All the thoughts and feelings, the 51 mental states, that's outflowing awareness. You can't stop it. It's
okay.
Unstoppable. You have to realize that that's what we do. We produce the 51 mental states are always happening. The only problem is clinging to them, thinking that that's us.
Okay.
Duality. And when you understand the co-emergent Dharmakaya and this is another terminology, the co-emergent, you know, out the radiance of the Dharmakaya or the base awareness and the outflowing awareness, they're not separable. They're just two parts. It's like the sun and its rays. They come together. And you just don't. The sun doesn't say, I don't like my rays going out. It doesn't have any problem with rays going out.
Thank you.
Well, and the ocean doesn't have any problem with waves. We have a hell of a lot of problems with everything we experience. We identify them as me and we cling to them. And when we realize that we don't have to do that, because by recognizing the emptiness, that it's not separate from this base awareness, it's part of it. And if we rest in that base awareness while everything else is going on, then we're free from suffering. That's the real suffering, is clinging.
So I'm just going to repeat back to you, because for a moment I think I got it. So base awareness, if I rest in the nature of mind, the base awareness, it is not separate from all these thoughts and everything else that go on and perceives all the five consciousnesses. It is not separate from everything it perceives outwardly either.
No, they come all together. It's a package deal.
It's a package deal. Okay. Thank you. I've heard the term before, and it's like, okay.
To put it in the crudest terms.
Is the base awareness the same as the primordial awareness?
Yeah, I mean, there's just lots of terminology.
Okay. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
So Fred, in your analogy, I'm sorry. I didn't want to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Fred, in your analogy, is the base awareness the sun and the 51 mental states the rays?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it. Yeah.
You got it. Enlightened now.
I knew I had to do this class.
So, would you say the primordial awareness is eternal?
Well, it's beyond those kind of descriptions.
Eternity. Yeah, you can't define. Beyond,
you know, that it's beyond space and time.
Okay.
It's not.
Yeah.
So it's beyond conceptualization. Eternity, we have a preconceived idea of what eternity is.
Well, you actually can't describe eternity. I mean, I can't.
Well, some people think it means forever, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But so it, when you use words, it's they're just analogies, yeah. They're metaphors.
Yeah, okay.
So the Buddha nature pervades everything, you know, that's one way of saying, you know.
So where do dreams fit in all this?
That's just another
word, right? Yeah.
It's just a different, you know,
or experiential.
It's just another aspect of outflowing awareness that happens.
Okay. Yeah, it's another perception.
Yeah, and then there are dream yoga. You can do dream yoga and use that to realize that what's happening in our daytime is like a dream too. It doesn't have any solidity. In a dream, it doesn't have, you know, you can live a zillion years in a dream and do thousands of different things and be, you know, jump off cliffs and do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And when you wake up, you realize it was only a dream, but this is a different kind of dream. It has a little bit more solidity, but
yeah.
It's also just a creation of our perceptions.
Yeah. Okay.
So we should dedicate our coming together to may all beings be free from the anxieties and concerns they have because of the craziness of the world right now. And may everyone who's sick, may our merit help them, relieve them from their suffering. May they all heal quickly.